This is small enough. We should almost be in a. I'd rather be in a round table than sitting up in Trinity. So I'll try not to look like a deer in the headlights. I know it's a short. We have short time, so feel free to email me if you have any specific questions. If we don't have time, if I don't see you afterwards in the causeway. Thank you very much. On behalf of my co-authors, it's a pleasure to be here with you today. All my co-authors are still at the University of British Columbia. And I have no disclosures other than my own personal biases and opinions. Now, when I originally submitted the abstract for this presentation to the APHA, it hadn't been published. Since then, the paper has been published, so rather than go through the normal introduction methods, results, conclusions. I'm still going to do that, but what I wanted to do rather was take some of the time to discuss, while giving you that background, how to A, interpret the findings from spatial analysis for studies relevant to for injury, just because the technology and injury epidemiology is still emerging. It's still relatively new that we use GIS for injury prevention and control compared to how we traditionally look at risk factors. So I want to go through just how to interpret the results, because my interest is really is to expand the use of this tool in the field. And then also to talk about a particular type of spatial analytical tool, the spatial scan statistic, and its application for looking at recovery following injury. Now, there's many types of scan statistics. It's just like a regression analysis. There's many types of regression analysis. There's many types of spatial scan statistics, and so they all have different applications and use depending on the type of data that you have. So I'll talk about one of them, which is the scan statistic. I got to find an easier way to say that so I don't get caught up for ordinal data, and that's what we're working with here. Now, conservative estimates are that if you're hospitalized for major trauma in the U.S., but on average, 90% of the trauma population will live. Depending on the injury, some rates are a little lower than that, but some are higher than that as well. And so it brings to mind, at least in my mind, two things, that we can't make much more improvements in the quality of trauma care, no matter how hard we try. We can't get much better. What we can get better at is improving access to definitive care service, especially for rural populations, and also be more vigilant in how we care for injured patients as they recover. Those, to me, are the two areas that we can make the most improvements in care. And it's in that second, that latter point that I've decided to focus my research on, just because for personal reasons, as well as that there's a great need, I think, to become more vigilant to survivors of injury. Now, that said, when we look at recovery from injury, we look at it in many different ways. We can look at long-term mortality. We can look at change in functional health outcomes. We can look at change in quality of life. We can look at access to healthcare services afterwards. And all those things are important, and I wouldn't say that we should ever stop doing those, but I think there's also an opportunity to look at outcomes spatially. You know, how does recovery patterns, how does it present itself geographically? Do persons with similar outcomes, either good outcomes or poor outcomes, do they live near others that have similarly poor or good outcomes, for that matter? And then how big are the concentrations of these outcomes? Are there, you know, can we identify zones in which, you know, there's 100 people within 5 square miles, 10 square miles? Are there, do these outcomes seem to cluster in space? And in these ways, traditional statistical analysis of looking at patterns can't get at that, but the spatial analytical tools can. And we already have, through either hospital registries or your surveys, the data in order to replicate spatial analytical tools that are used quite regularly in other areas of epidemiology to use that to look at patterns of outcomes amongst injury survivors. We have, we can geocode information from the registries to get where individuals reside or where they're injured. We can get that information also from surveys. We have information on where facilities are, such as OT, PTs, speech therapy, practitioners, because we have the licensing information of where they choose to be licensed. We have phone books. We have all sorts of ways to take spatial information or take information that's existed in the world and look at it spatially to try to get a better idea of how recovery changes over time. Now, the spatial scan statistic works is already well used in other areas of epidemiology, but for what we have is our event data, such as where the persons are residing. We can look at either counts of this. We can look at we can also look at the background population at risk. It's if it's drawing from census tracts for your population at risk, and we can look at the raw counts. We can and we can also look at this through a Poisson process as well. And through the next couple slides, I'm just going to walk you through how this can be done. Now, for our study, we were working with pediatric discharges from the emergency room at Vancouver Children's Hospital. We had baseline data from persons who elected to participate in the study, and then we followed them over time with mail-in or web-based follow-up surveys at 1 month, 4 months, and 12 months. So we had four time points in which we were getting follow-up data from them on their functional health outcomes as well as their emotional health outcomes and their physical health outcomes. And we took their information from where they lived, and we assigned it to their postal code, which in Canada, the postal code is not, it's somewhat synonymous to the zip code, except it's smaller. You get a lot more postal codes than we have zip codes. But it's still an aggregated point. And so what we're doing was not looking at, we didn't have the numbers to actually look at where people were actually residing. What we could do is we aggregated where they lived to their for their postal code, which in urban areas, one postal code can be four or five city blocks. So it's pretty fine scale for an urban area analysis. And our study area was the Vancouver metropolitan area, which is highly urbanized. Now, but what we were also interested is looking at not just whether or not individuals who were reporting poor outcomes, we wanted to see a range of outcomes being reported. And this is why we chose to use an ordinal model, because rather than simply dichotomizing recovery into those who had poor outcomes than everybody else, what we were also interested in looking at was like, well, who's reporting poor outcomes? Who is reporting potentially poor outcomes, and who's reporting good outcomes, and then very good outcomes, with the idea that not only are we identifying clusters of persons who would fall in the tailings, we're identifying clusters of persons who are likely to fall in the tailings if their outcomes were to worsen, which I think for targeting interventions is quite important, because not only are you identifying those most at risk, you're also able to identify those who are potentially at risk. And from the same philosophy, you can identify those who are doing well, because when it comes to understanding recovery patterns, either if it's because of insurance status or socioeconomic variables or access to care, I think it's important to identify where good outcomes are occurring as well as poor outcomes are occurring to get the whole gamut of the spectrum. And so the ordinal model allows us to do that. Other spatial scan statistics, you can dichotomize or you can just look at counts. So there are other applications to this. Now, very briefly, how this works is that on the graphic on the far left, we have our points, which would be our geocoded centroid for a postal code, and we're tying the event cases to those blue points that you see on the screen. Now, the scan statistic works by laying over a fishnet or a gridnet mesh over our points, and from there, it builds essentially circles that capture. Capture the events. And the circles are dynamic. They grow, they shrink, and so the circles are constantly getting larger and larger and larger. And what the scan statistic is doing is it's identifying how many points are within, or it's identifying within that circle, and then how many events are outside the circle. And what you're getting is a risk ratio of likelihood of the events being inside the scan window to the likelihood of being outside the scan window. So we can identify concentrations of or clusters of events that are low risk, where the likelihood is greater to be on the outside than on the inside, and we can identify concentrations of high risk, where the likelihood is greater on the inside than on the outside, and that because the circle is constantly shrinking and expanding, we can identify at what radius, at what geographic distance does that cluster appear. Is it within one block? Is it within five blocks? Is it within 10 blocks? 1 mile, 2 miles, 3 miles, and you can set all these criteria either a priori or let the default within the software programs do that. So it does offer some, a ways for us to look dynamically at how large those clusters are in terms of where we want, what we would identify as a potential cluster of high risk or low risk. Now, you get a number of outputs within the analysis.
We doing okay on time?
Yeah. Okay. That similar to what you would get when you're working with a regression statistic. First and foremost, you're going to get your clusters. You're going to identify, you know, where is the most likely cluster that was occurring based on your event scores. And what's important, I think, with the scan statistics is you get your primary cluster, what's the most likely event, but you also obtain secondary clusters. And so this would allow us to see not just what is the most clustered area of low risk or high risk, but also secondary clusters that also are statistically significant. Now the clusters, the output scores will also get their category scores. Is the cluster made up of persons that are primarily low risk, primarily medium to low risk, primarily high risk, and so on? We can define those clusters based on those output scores. And then, of course, you get your relative risk ratios, which is just simply the ratio of the observed to the expected. And so we can see those with the observed expected risk ratio over 1 versus under 1 for less than what would be expected for risk. And you get associated p-values. And then you get the radius of how large that cluster is. And as well, we can do a space-time analysis of whether or not that cluster exists for persons who responded at one point in time, such as their baseline health score at 1 month or at 4 months or at 12 months, but we can also see whether or not that cluster appears through the transition from responses from 4 months through 12 months, which would tell us that that point of time in recovery is where that cluster is occurring. Now, here's just another way that I've created the output to kind of simplify it, if you will. On the far left, we can see where the clusters are identified. The categories that we obtain from that are the response score. So one being the low PQL score, be it physical health or mental health, 2, 3, 4 progressing and to better health outcome scores. We get the number of observed cases that are within the cluster for the particular category score they correspond, and then the number of expected in our risk ratios from there. And then all of this would also be tied to an output, so we can identify the census tracts or the postal codes that where these individuals reside or where those individual cases are occurring. I didn't want to do too many graphics because I read on the APHA that figures were discouraged, so this is a very quick and dirty map. But what essentially the output is a circle, and the circle is tied to where those census tracts or postal codes or whatever your unit is of where those cases are occurring from. Now, you can do lots of different things with this. You can do an animated model so you can see it occurring over time. You can see it growing. You can do a three-dimensional model on here if you wanted to see the elevated risk to it. You can overlay all sorts of other data with it as well. And if you're wanting to look at, you know, good outcomes, poor outcomes, you can change, you know, the colors accordingly to identify, all right, is this red circle is area of very low outcomes, the blue circle's area is very good outcomes. So there are opportunities to improve upon what I am showing you here, no doubt. Now, there's many ways that we can use this that still need to be done in my mind. Just simply describing the pattern of injury or injury recovery spatially, either at one point in time or over time, I think needs to be done. I think that would aid in our understanding of how individuals recover through injury, whether or not there are, to better understand how it's related to access to services, to better understand how outcomes are related to other covariates, such as either insurance status, socioeconomic status, and so on. And also, by setting it up with an ordinal model and not simply dichotomizing outcomes either into good or to bad, we can identify those individuals who are likely to fall through the cracks. And so we can identify those low, those risk clusters that are potentially at, or those individuals who are potentially at risk of becoming bad or becoming worse or experiencing, you know, drops in quality of life or functional health, who would be likely candidates for interventions if our intention is to target interventions to populations in need. And such like at the PCORI initiatives for funding, that's one of the main goals. It's like, how can we reduce health disparities through targeted interventions? And so that would be one way that we could use these techniques in practice. And lastly, all it is always, lastly is to also identify the low-risk clusters, because just as important it is if identifying those who are doing poorly, I think it's important to identify those who are doing well, so we can identify the differences between those areas, or their backgrounds, or their support mechanism, or what are those factors that are leading to those differences, and whether or not there's actually something inherent in the geography that would allow us to answer those questions. Okay, I know it's a brief conversation. I'm happy to take questions now or at another point in time.
We can do one question.
We can do one question. Okay. Thank you very much. I want to acknowledge my co-authors on the study, and the paper was recently published in Injury Epidemiology. So that's my plug. Okay. Thank you.